Welcome to Spectrum, a daily public affairs presentation of WCSM. And now, here's Spectrum, the talk of Mercer and Auglaize counties.
Good afternoon, Grand Lake region. Welcome to another episode of Spectrum here today on Tuesday, March 31st. We've got a really fun guest, and certainly the weather around here has certainly made it even more interesting to have him on air today. Coming down from Lima from WLIO, we have meteorologist Connor Prince. Connor, thank you for coming down this afternoon.
My pleasure. Good to be here. Thank you.
You're absolutely welcome. And, you know, let's maybe ease into this because we can probably go down a lot of rabbit holes with this. Yeah. But maybe for those that aren't familiar with you, maybe tell us what got you interested in weather to begin with.
Yeah, so I have always been a weather nerd and a weather geek for as long as I can remember. I just remember being fascinated as a child growing up with the weather and how it could change from one day to another. And it's Ohio weather. You could go from 70 and sunshine one day to all of a sudden you have 30 and snow on the ground the next day. And just seeing Mother Nature go from one extreme to the other, it just made my passion grew. And then when I went to Ohio State in Columbus to get my meteorology degree, I realized, oh my goodness, I have the ability to really use my passion in education meteorology to make a difference. And then I came up to Lima 4 years ago already next month. So time flies and living the dream for sure.
Time certainly does fly. And I think when you think of weather, I think that's probably just how the pattern changes so much is one of those things that is just eye-catching, especially here in Ohio. Mm-hmm. For people who've maybe only finished, you know, maybe seeing the finished forecast on TV online, but what does the job actually look like behind the scenes when they see all the cool graphics and all the different things that are on your 3 or 4 minute production of a forecast?
Right.
What does the behind the scenes look like?
Yeah, so there's a lot of work that goes into making a weather forecast, and honestly, weather never sleeps. And people sometimes forget that even when we go home as a meteorologist, we're always checking our phones, checking our laptops, gadgets, computers of what's going on with the weather, radar checking, communicating with the National Weather Service and checking those models around the clock because they update all the time. It does not stop. And so before I make a weather forecast, I have to put in about 2 hours of work on a normal day. Making not only going over data, looking over the computer weather model graphic, writing my notes down, and then going into my weather graphics because I make all my weather graphics by hand on computer at the station. I want to make it as fun and entertaining while informative as possible. And then all that work for two and a half hours, you get it done in 3 minutes and it just sort of goes fly by like that. And after you do your normal weather cast, you sort of just rinse and repeat, right? Rinse and repeat and sort of update as things go along. But then things get interesting when severe weather gets thrown into the mix. That's a whole nother ballpark right there.
Well, and you said something also kind of, you know, rinse and repeat, get ready for the next forecast because there's, you know, if you start in the morning, there's always a noon, there's an evening forecast and there's an overnight forecast.
Right.
How far out can you really trust weather?
Yeah, so that is a great question. And so my normal standard is if you want a specific forecast for a day that talks about actual air temperature, rain chance, snow chance, or whatever, my rule of thumb is up to 7 days out. Honestly, once you get past 7 days, the best that any meteorologist can do. So yes, that means even if there's an app out there that shows you a 21 day forecast specifically, I always tell people you take that with a grain of salt because weather can change. This is Ohio. Weather patterns fluctuate quite a bit here. And the best you could do beyond 7 days is a very broad temperature and precipitation outlook. Like, is it going to be above normal or below normal precipitation or temperature wise beyond a week? And That's really about it. So that's why I never make a forecast 21 days out. So you're never going to see me forecasting, oh, it's on July 4th of this year. So up to 7 days out is usually my gold standard.
Well, and of course, you know, the National Weather Service, when it comes to even like, you know, something like July 4th or this summer, mm-hmm. the National Weather Service provides outlooks,
mm-hmm.
guidance,
mm-hmm.
not a forecast.
Right.
And what maybe is the difference between when someone sees something online that appears to be a forecast, but it's more of a general outlook? What would be some of the differences of those things?
Yeah, absolutely. So the National Weather Service, Storm Prediction Center, Climate Prediction Center, all of those big NOAA agencies actually use computer weather model data and simulations of what is currently observed in our atmosphere now and see what general pattern looks to evolve as you go 3 or 4 months out. They don't give specific forecasts for a day out, but then when you go to a weather app or something that goes like a month out with a specific forecast, that is based off of one computer weather model run. And that weather model run, I have seen weather apps go from all of a sudden 60 degrees and then 6 hours later drops to 26 for the high with snow. Even one time during the summer month last year, it was forecasting a high in Lima of 114. And I'm like, we've never been 114 in Lima before. And so you just got to be careful with those apps because they're based off the computers. But those outlooks that you see from NOAA that go several months out, like for example, the winter weather outlook, that is made with human interpretation based off large-scale climate patterns that we observe data-wise for any meteorologist throughout the country and world.
And maybe for those at home that, you know, they watch the weather, they've seen meteorologists for 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
Can forecasts be right scientifically but still feel wrong to the public?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I tell people all the time that even if our forecast may appear wrong, because I mean, it's predicting the future. I'm still learning to this day myself of how to be a better meteorologist, how to be a better forecaster, because I mean, hey, predicting the future is hard. I mean, look at this March Madness bracket that we've had. Imagine weather forecasting like that. I mean, goodness gracious, you have many curveballs that come in. But even if we're off by, let's say, if I'm forecasting a high of 71 degrees and we hit 72, technically I'm wrong. But I mean, it's in the ballpark right there in that general scope of things. But I think really it gets really difficult when you're trying to forecast specific, like today, we actually do have a risk of severe weather later today, and one town may see nothing of rain free, and then another town could get a severe storm. And so that's why I try to forecast more in a probability aspect. So I try to tell people, you may not get it, but if you do get it, you could get some strong winds, hail, that sort of thing, rather than everyone's going to get it, but it's hard.
All right, well, here's when it comes to forecasting, what would be more difficult? Do you feel snowfall forecasts and snowstorms could be more difficult than predicting severe weather?
Oh, goodness. Winter weather. I love winter weather with all my heart. And you know what? Winter weather is probably one of the hardest things to ever forecast because when we forecast winter weather, we're not just looking at the surface. We are looking up miles and miles up into the atmosphere, and 1 degree difference at any part of the atmosphere could change the forecast from snow to plain rain to plain to sleet or freezing rain. And just in that short distance in that mile, it's really hard. And especially with winter weather, because people focus on how much snow are we going to get, how much precipitation are we going to get. Because late January, we had a significant snowstorm here, and at first the weather models were suggesting it was actually looking like we were going to miss it. It was going to go to our south, but forward, the models corrected themselves and it shifted north and north, and we had to keep increasing snowfall. And so those forecasts are just hard because everyone gets affected by winter weather and that aspect. Severe weather is definitely difficult itself in there, but there's just something about winter weather that everyone seems to get impacted. And not everyone gets impacted by severe weather during an event, but winter weather is definitely that. Everyone gets it for sure.
Yeah, and then it never fails that even, especially winter, mm-hmm. and it seemed like maybe last winter, this winter, mm-hmm. it's just every single time it felt like a big snowstorm came through.
Mm-hmm.
golly darn, did the cold air just come in right behind it. Yeah. And that polar vortex word gets thrown in behind mm-hmm. a lot of these. Maybe the polar vortex terminology has been around a while, mm-hmm. but has it been used more recently than maybe sometimes it should?
Yes. So the polar vortex is not a new thing. It's always been around, and it is a large circumnavigating polar vortex cyclone in the northern portions of the hemisphere at the North Pole. And large area, broad area, low pressure rotates, and when it weakens, it then can sometimes dip southward into our area, give very cold Arctic outbreaks. The winter of 2013 to 2014, I remember this very specifically, it was the January 6th and 7th, 2014 polar vortex, where we had wind chills in Mercer County down to negative 48. During that polar vortex episode. And that really got the notoriety spread around of the polar vortex. And every time that word, that phrase is thrown around, people sometimes tend to panic a little bit. And they're like, oh my gosh, we're all going to freeze and cold air is coming down. But especially since the winter of 2013-2014, it's really been an increasing term thrown around. And while it's scientifically correct, it's always been here, and even during our worst winters back in the 70s, that the polar vortex was around for those winters as well.
Yeah, I remember that winter very well because I was at UNOH uh-huh. for school, and if I recall that we missed an entire week mm-hmm. of school before we actually went back to school. And if it was right at the beginning of January, we probably were even struggling coming back from break. Because UNOH at the time was running on the older system where we would get off from Thanksgiving mm-hmm. all the way through Christmas. And then you'd come back sometime right after New Year's Day. But if it was right around that first week and a half of January, yeah, totally.
Yeah, for sure. And that winter, for sure, that December, January, February, March of 2013-2014, it was consistently below average temperatures, above average snowfall. That was one of our snowiest winters on record, and certainly this generation's snowiest winter since really the late 70s. That winter brought widespread snow totals of 5 to 6 feet all across West Central Northwest Ohio, and it was just mind-boggling amount of snow for sure that winter.
When I see pictures from 1978, I just don't believe it.
Right. It's like, just
my
incredible.
My mind can't actually think about the snow being 5 feet up. You know, even the light pole that's outside the studio here. Like,
right.
Imagine how high that would have to be.
Oh, that was just, I can't imagine going through a storm of that magnitude. If that storm would just cripple society in Ohio if that were to happen again. And that was just the perfect setup of a bomb cyclone wrapping in all that ferocious cold snow wind. I mean, snowfall fell about 1 to 2 feet, but with that wind gusting hurricane force, I mean, it drifted, I mean, as tall as a one-story building, if not even higher in spots. And those wind chills are down in the negative 60s during that blizzard. So that was just that was the benchmark winter storm for Ohio.
We could talk winter weather all afternoon. Let's take a quick break because I do want to highlight the trip that you're taking up. And yes. Obviously we're heading into more, I think what's, it's been, we've kind of related to watches and warnings with tornadoes about, you know, taco ingredients, the difference between watches and warnings. Mm-hmm. But also, I think they're calling them sky noodles right now is the terminology being used on social media. So let's take a quick break, Connor, and we come back. We're going to talk about your trip out to Tornado Alley that's coming up, and we'll talk about tornadoes and severe weather and what people should be aware of, okay?
Sounds good. Spring cleaning
isn't just for your house. It's for your life. If your job is getting old, it's time to clear the clutter and spring into IT. Go to My Computer Career.
My Computer Career helped me get the skills and certifications I needed to start a new life as an IT professional in months, not years.
Earn the certifications the top employers are looking for right now. Visit mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation to see if it's time to spring into IT. Financial aid is available to those who qualify, including VA benefits.
We have Connor Prince from WLIO in Lima in here for Spectrum this afternoon, and already have had a great conversation about weather and what you enjoy about meteorology. And you're going to make the trip of what some people call a lifetime.
Yes.
Visiting Tornado Alley for your birthday next week. So happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
And where exactly are you going out west?
Yes. So I leave tomorrow for Tornado Alley. So I actually have a school visit in Sydney first thing tomorrow. Then after I get finished that school visit, I'm going to start my trip. I'm going to leave out. I'm going first to Elk City, Oklahoma, which is near the Oklahoma-Texas border for a couple nights. And then I'm going to be relocating for 5 nights to the heart of it, Oklahoma City. And this trip right here is just something a meteorologist and a weather enthusiast always dreams of. You are fascinated by the process of severe weather tornadoes that Mother Nature can provide. And trust me, I've been through university classes. I've been trained by the National Weather Service before, and the training can only do so much. Once you go out into the field and experience what the raw power of Mother Nature, it's going to be an eye-opening experience for me. And so I am excited. I cannot wait to make this drive out there.
I've sat in similar National Weather Service trainings for, you know, storm spotting, some of the seminars that they do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, learning how to see a tornado on radar, reading the velocity charts, the wind speed radars. Yes. Versus your traditional radar. Mm-hmm. That people are more familiar with. There's another type of radar that you can also look at. And we were talking kind of off air, a lot of people around here probably remember the Indian Lake tornado from,
yes,
from 2024. And you were sharing a story about, you know, being able, you had no actual verbal confirmation, I think you said, about the tornado, but you could see things on radar. Maybe go into explaining a little bit more of that in detail.
Yeah, so technology and radars have drastically evolved over the last 10, 20 years. And there's now a product called dual polarization within National Weather Service radars that allows us to analyze not only the horizontal, but the vertical aspect of our atmosphere. And on March 14th, 2024, will be a day I will never forget. That put my education to the test, where the initial Indian Lake supercell actually traveled through Mercer County and dropped a couple EF1 tornadoes here. But when it crossed I-75 in Auglaize County, it dropped an EF3 near Freiburg and went through Glacier Hill Lake's RV and campground in Auglaize County. And I actually had viewer video of the tornado going through Glacier Hill Lakes at the time. But when it was going approaching Indian Lake, the tornado had hit so much debris and lofted it so high up in the air that National Weather Service radar from Wilmington and Clinton County was able to detect tornado debris in Auglaize County. That is the first time I could ever recall a tornado debris signature being detected in Auglaize County. And what that is the radar. Our raindrop, snowflakes, hailstones are usually uniform in shape most of the time. But if you have pieces of debris, part of a house, part of trees, part of whatever that's flying up, they're all different shapes and sizes. And the radar drops out that area of, this is not a meteorological target. If that is over a strong area of rotation, you have a tornado that is on the ground. And in that case, I didn't even need in-person visualization. I saw the tornado live on radar producing debris and going over Indian Lake.
I think this also, for people that maybe don't know, when you see a tornado watch, obviously, is, mm-hmm, it's a wide area or, right, a wider area. Mm-hmm. Or a tornado warning is literally a specific graded area. Now, mm-hmm, even on a tornado warning, when they issue a tornado warning from the National Weather Service, there will be times within that warning where you can read whether or not it has been radar identified or radar possible, mm-hmm, versus if an actual storm spotter has called in for that specific storm and has identified a storm. Is that what people should look for when they, you know, obviously a tornado warning is a warning,
like, right?
Take that serious for what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a difference between when radar trips a signal saying, mm-hmm, this storm could have a tornado versus if if someone has actually called in and spotted debris and it is signatured on the radar.
Right. So tornado warning, like you said, tornado warning is a warning. So regardless if it's radar indicated or observed, we always want people to seek shelter and take precautions no matter what. But in that text, it will be indicated if it's radar indicated confirmed or radar indicated rotation. But if it's been spotted or touched down, it will either say weather spotters confirmed tornado, public observed, law enforcement confirmed, or even radar confirmed tornado where we see tornado debris in the air. And then when those statements come out, that's sort of used to up the, we're very serious about this. This is not a something that should be taken lightly. And there's even more heightened levels called a PDS tornado warning, where they call a particularly dangerous situation, which those have been issued in our area before. And there's one even higher called the tornado emergency. We have never had a tornado emergency in Mercer County history. I hope that stays the case. But if a tornado emergency is issued, that is reserved where there is an exceedingly high threat to life and property, and that is reserved for the most violent tornadoes, EF3s, 4s, and 5s. But yeah, any warning is a warning issue, but if you look in those texts, you'll see if it's radar indicated versus confirmed by public or the radar itself.
Which, again, to relay the message, you don't have to go looking for those specifically.
Oh, no.
If you see a tornado warning pop right up for your viewing area, it is best just to go seek shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And don't become a storm spotter just because it might be in your backyard.
Right, exactly. I understand we have Midwest nature in us, but resist the urge and put your safety first, always.
some of the bigger tornadoes obviously do occur out west. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma, known for them. Texas is known for them. Missouri, Tornado Alley. But we've seen this shift, mm-hmm. and we'll kind of wrap up with this, where even Indiana, I mean, and Van Wert has seen a high amount of tornadoes compared to maybe normal history would say itself. Do you see a shift of just how meteorology or maybe just nature has maybe shifted that pattern a little bit to where our risk of tornadoes has increased over the last 5 years?
Yeah, so I've been observing trends, and I think every meteorologist in Ohio and Indiana has been observing trends about this. And without a doubt, the last decade or so, we've seen a notable increase in the amount of tornadoes. Now, I do think we are doing a better job of observing the little weak EF0, EF1 tornadoes. But I will say, about a little over a decade ago, Ohio used to average about 12 tornadoes a year. That number is now 21 tornadoes a year. So there are signs that Tornado Alley, in the most favorable area for tornadoes, may be shifting eastward somewhat. We'll still have to do more research into it to determine how far east it's going to go. But there's definitely data supporting that Ohio's tornado seasons might be getting a bit busier and active with time. In 2024, we saw 74 tornadoes in Ohio that year. That was the most on record for the state.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've had quite a few tornadoes in the last several years.
And we're already where?
This year, we've had 6 tornadoes in Ohio, but we've had 4 really in the Grand Lake, West Central Ohio region. We had 2 in Shelby County already, 1 in Auglaize County, and 1 in Hardin County that hit in the Hardin County Fairgrounds in Kenton already. So we've already had 4 tornadoes just in this area in the month of March alone. So it's already been active this year.
Have a plan.
Have
a plan. And for people, we'll wrap this up with maybe some simple tornado safety tips. And, you know, I think most people, if you live in a one-story home, the main tip is to find an interior room, bathtub. Is that kind of the gist?
Yeah, absolutely. So first and foremost, if you have a basement, always go to your basement. That is a great idea. And even if you don't have a basement, there are still options, like you said, that you can seek shelter. The idea is you want to get in the most interior part of a house with as many walls around you as possible. That's going to protect you from the intense winds outside to some degree by from the tornado. You want a room with no windows, obviously, because windows, when they break, they shatter sharp. They could hurt you in that sort of way. And bathrooms are good areas to seek shelter as well. And there's actually been studies of bathtubs. They are strong. Like, some bathtubs have been known to be able to survive intense tornadoes as well. So I tell people all the time, lie flat in the bathtub and cover yourself if you have time with like a mattress or have a bicycle helmet or something with you. And oftentimes those are good places to seek shelter during tornadoes, and always have that plan ready to go.
And maybe a myth that we see on TV a lot, Do not go to bridges and overpasses.
No, never, ever go under bridges and overpasses. The winds can actually accelerate underneath a bridge or overpass. And we've seen some very scary situations, especially out west in Tornado Alley, where people have done that. And that could end in a very tragic way. So I never suggest going under bridge or overpass.
Well, Connor, I wish we had more time to talk about this, because we could probably fill Grand Lake region up with weather knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
All day. Happy early birthday.
Thank you so much.
Be safe out in Tornado Alley. Hopefully you get to see some action. I mean.
Yeah, I hope so too. Definitely in a field, nowhere near any town, but in a field away from anyone. That'll be just amazing to see how the science of see it all work come together. It's going to be a blast.
Will you be live streaming at all with your channel?
I will be taking frequent pictures and videos and posting them on my Facebook page, Meteorologist Connor Prince. So if you want to follow along, be sure to go to my Facebook page, and I will be posting frequent updates from there.
Perfect. Connor, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your day. And again, have a great time on your trip.
Thank you so much. Good to be here.